killed, and some tranquilizers were put in the back of them, obviously in order to make them dizzy and fall asleep.
A suppository, it was some sort of tranquilizer.
Yes, yes.
An airport officer told us she saw the two men hustled onto the plane. She didn't want to be identified, but she had no doubt about where the plane came from.
I know that the aircraft was American registration.
How did you know the aircraft was American?
Because the N first on the registration.
The so-called N number marks an American plane. Swedish records show this Gulfstream G5, N379P, was there that night. Within hours, Alziri and Agiza, both of whom were seeking asylum in Sweden, found themselves in an Egyptian prison. Hammerberg says Sweden sent a diplomat to see them weeks later.
What did they tell him about how they were being treated?
That they had been treated brutally in general. They had been beaten up several times. That they had been threatened. But probably the worst phase of torture came after that first visit.
And what was that?
Electricity. They were under electric torture.
The Egyptians say Al-Ghiza is an Islamic militant and they sentenced him to 25 years. But Alziri wasn't charged. After 2 years in jail, he was sent to his village in Egypt. The authorities are not allowing interviews.
The option of not doing something is extraordinarily dangerous to the American people.
Until 3 months ago, Michael Scheuer was a senior CIA official in the Counterterrorist Center. He created the CIA's Osama bin Laden unit and helped set up the rendition program during the Clinton administration.
Basically, the National Security Council gave us the mission: take down these cells, dismantle them, and take people off the streets so they can't kill Americans. They just didn't give us anywhere to take the people after we captured them.
So, the CIA started flying suspects to Egypt and Jordan. Scheuer says renditions were authorized by Clinton's National Security Council and officials in the Congress, and all understood what it meant to send suspects to those countries.
They don't have the same legal system we have, but we know that going into it. And so the idea that we're going to suddenly throw our hands up like Claude Rains in Casablanca and say, I'm shocked that justice in Egypt isn't like it is in Milwaukee, is there's a certain disingenuousness to that.
And one of the things that you know about justice in Egypt is that people get tortured.
Well, it can be rough. I have to assume that that's the case.
Doesn't that make the United States complicit in the torture?
You'll have to ask the lawyers.
I mean, it's a convenience, isn't it?
It's convenient in the sense that it allows American policymakers and American politicians to avoid making hard decisions. Yes, it's very convenient. It's finding someone else to do your dirty work.
The indispensable tool for that work is a small fleet of executive jets authorized to land at all U.S. military bases worldwide.
Can you tell me something about the planes that are used in these operations?
No.
Scheuer wouldn't tell us, and the CIA declined to talk about it. But it turns out the CIA has left plenty of clues out in the open in the public record. The tail number of the Gulfstream was first reported by witnesses in Pakistan. In public records, the tail number came back to a company called Premier Executive Transport Services, with headquarters listed in Dedham, Massachusetts. But Dedham is a dead end. The address is a law office on the second floor of this bank. There's no airline there. There was one thing in the record that did lead somewhere, a second tail number. That number belonged to this unmarked 737. We found the jet in Scotland, apparently refueling. It's possible to track these planes by their flight plans, and often, believe it or not, the information is on the internet. Using the web and aviation sources, we were able to find 600 flights to 40 countries. It appears the number of flights increased greatly in the Bush administration after 9/11. The planes are based in North Carolina. They usually fly to Dulles Airport outside Washington before heading overseas. Major destinations read like a roadmap to the war on terror. 30 trips to Jordan, 19 to Afghanistan, 17 to Morocco, 16 to Iraq. Other stops include Egypt, Libya, and Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The logs show one flight that took the 737 from Skopje, Macedonia, to Baghdad, and finally, Kabul, Afghanistan. We found a man who says he was on that flight. Khalid Al-Masri was born in Kuwait, but now lives in Germany with his wife and four children. He became a German citizen 10 years ago. He told us he was on vacation in Macedonia last year when Macedonian police, apparently acting on a tip, took him off a bus, held him for 3 weeks, then took him to the Skopje airport, where he believes he was abducted by the CIA.
They took me to this room, and they hit me all over, and they slashed my clothes with sharp objects.
You say they cut them off. How?
Maybe knives or scissors. I also heard photos being taken while this was going on, and they took off the blindfold, and I saw that there were a lot of men standing in the room. They were wearing black masks and black gloves.
Al-Masri says he was injected with drugs and, after his flight, woke up in an American-run prison in Afghanistan. He showed us a prison floor plan he drew from memory. He says other prisoners were from Pakistan, Tanzania, Yemen, and Saudi Arabia. Al-Masri told us he was held for 5 months and interrogated by Americans through an interpreter.
He yelled at me and he said that you're in a country without laws and no one knows where you are. Do you know what that means? I said yes.
What did it mean to you?
It was very clear to me that he meant I could stay in my cell for 20 years or be buried somewhere, and nobody knows what happened to you.
What were they asking you?
Whether I had contacts with Islamic parties like Al-Qaeda or the Muslim Brotherhood or aid organizations. Lots of questions.
He says he told the Americans that he'd never been involved in militant Islam. Al-Masri says he wasn't tortured, but he says he was beaten and kept in solitary confinement. Then, after his 5 months of questioning, he was simply released.
Did anyone ever tell you that they'd made a mistake?
He told me that they had confused names and they had cleared it up, but I can't imagine that. You can clear up switching names in a few minutes.
He says he was flown out of Afghanistan and dumped on a road in Albania. When he finally made his way back home to Germany, he discovered his wife and kids were gone. They had moved in with her family in Lebanon. He called there to explain what happened.
That's a hell of a story. Did she believe you?
She did. I never lied to her, and my appearance showed that I had been in prison.
You have a 7-year-old son. How did you explain this to him?
I explained to him what happened to me, and he understood.
And when he asked you who did this to you, what did you say?
I said it was the Americans.
How do you know if you're picking up the right people?
You do the best you can. It's not a science. It's gathering as much information as you can, deciding on the quality of it, and then determining the risk the person poses. If you make a mistake, you make a mistake.
There was another destination that we noticed frequently in the plane's flight logs. It's Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan. It's a predominantly Muslim country with a reputation for torture. Craig Murray is the former British ambassador there. He told us that Uzbek citizens captured in Afghanistan were being flown back to Tashkent on the American plane.
I know of two instances for certain of prisoners who were brought back in a small jet, and I believe it was happening on a reasonably regular basis.
The jet operated by whom?
Premier Executive Airline.
He says in Uzbekistan, many prisoners are subject to torture techniques straight out of the Middle Ages.
Techniques of drowning and suffocation. Rape was used quite commonly, and also insertion of limbs in boiling liquid.
Boiling people?
Yeah, it's quite common.
Murray complained to his superiors that British intelligence was using information gleaned by torture. He was recalled by London 4 months ago and quit the Foreign Office.
Any reason to believe that the CIA knows that people are being tortured in these jails?
The CIA definitely knows. I asked my deputy to go and speak to the CIA, and she came back and reported to me that she'd met the CIA head of station, who told her that, yes, this material probably was obtained under torture, but the CIA didn't see that as a problem.
The CIA disputes that. The agency told us that the meeting Murray describes never happened. The CIA also said it does not knowingly receive intelligence obtained by torture. President Bush, in a January interview with the New York Times, said this, "Torture is never acceptable." He added, "Nor do we hand over people to countries that do torture." Mike Scheuer says, in his experience, the U.S. asks receiving countries to promise that suspects will be treated according to the laws of that country.
I'm not completely confident that any of the information received was exacted by torture.
In Egypt?
In Egypt. I think we have people in the Middle East, in the various services we deal with, who are extraordinarily experienced at debriefing people. I personally think that any information gotten through extreme methods of torture would probably be pretty useless, because it would be someone telling you what you wanted to hear. The information that we have received as a result of these programs has been very useful to the United States.
And if some of that useful information is gleaned by torture, that's okay?
It's okay with me. I'm responsible for protecting Americans.
Scheuer says in the Clinton and Bush administrations and in Congress, details of rendition flights were known to top officials. Now that the missions are coming to light, Scheuer says there is worry in the CIA that field agents will take the fall if any of the missions are later deemed illegal.
CIA people feeling vulnerable to that?
Oh, I think from the first day we ever did it, there was a certain macabre humor that said sooner or later this sword of Damocles is going to fall, because if something goes wrong, the policymaker, the politicians, and the congressional committees aren't going to belly up to the bar and say, we authorize this.
I thought that was a pretty explosive 60 Minutes episode, even though I certainly know, and really everyone in Washington knows, about the practice of outsourcing torture. It isn't new. It has been done in the past under many administrations, but never, never to the extent that the Bush administration is doing it. And I want to explore this hour the law, because I am a lawyer, a constitutional lawyer, and it is clear, and it's beyond doubt, that this practice is against the law. And that's why the president has to be so cagey about it. If he admits that he knows this is going on, well, then he's breaking the law. Frankly, I would think that's an impeachable offense. So Bush does it with a wink and a nod. And he says, well, you know, torture is never acceptable. I'm not saying what's torture. Maybe beating someone and raping them isn't torture. You know, maybe sticking their hand in boiling liquid isn't torture. Torture is never acceptable, and neither do we send people to countries to be tortured, he said to the New York Times. Well, what does he get? He gets from the countries, oh, we won't torture them. And then the CIA gives to a list of countries who have already been for years now reported by the State Department to be countries that regularly torture people. We send people to these countries along with the promise they won't be tortured. These countries that regularly torture, that no one disputes that they do that. And we don't just send them the prisoners, folks. We send them a list of questions to be answered along with them. And what was very interesting to me in that 60 Minutes report was when Scheuer said they promised that they will be treated under the law of that country. Well, my friends, do you know the laws of these countries? Under Saudi Arabian law, you get your hands cut off if you steal. You get another body part cut off if you rape. And yes, torture for disagreeing with the political views of the leaders in Syria and Egypt and Saudi Arabia, that's against the law. The torture is legal. It's against the law to be against these leaders, and if you are against them, they do torture you. Everyone knows it's going on. And what's interesting to me is what anyone is going to do to stop it. I wouldn't be surprised if there already have been lawsuits filed. Frankly, it's about the only way to stop this. Already lawsuits filed, if there haven't been, there shouldn't be, by these victims against the CIA, against the people who tortured them. But if we follow anything from Sybil Edmonds' case, Sybil Edmonds, of course, is the ex-FBI translator who tried to bring to the attention of our government the spies for the enemy, for Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups, in the FBI, and was fired because of it. Her lawsuit was dismissed, not because it wasn't on the merits. In fact, the Justice Department admitted she had a very strong case. It was dismissed because merely adjudicating her issue, Judge Sentell found. The same judge, by the way, who appointed Kent Starr and who said that Poindexter and Ollie North were off the hook, even though they broke the laws and even though they committed perjury, it didn't matter. This same judge said, you know what? We are not going to adjudicate a case if it would embarrass the administration, if it would embarrass a foreign government, if it would bring to light techniques that we want to remain secret. It doesn't matter that it's against the law. It doesn't matter that it's against the Constitution, which, need I remind our president and the judges, prohibits under the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment. We're not even going to adjudicate the issue because it doesn't matter, apparently, according to our courts. It does not matter when the president violates the only oath he is required to say under the Constitution, the oath to uphold the Constitution. When we come back, I'm going to take some of your calls at 877-57-SCOOP, and then I want to go to the Bush press conference because he addresses this issue in the press conference, and his cagey response makes it clear to anyone who even slightly reads between the lines that he knows that this torture is occurring. And he's just not going to talk about it. We're going to get to your calls and the press conference right after these messages. Again, toll free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or comment on the weblog at RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
There's a new badge of honor in corporate America, time served in the joint. Like some rappers who get their street cred from their jail sentences, CEO corruption has now become so commonplace that some corporations are using their CEO's prison time as a cool marketing tool. Martha Stewart is the most famous case, of course, with her magazine recently running a cover picture of her tagged with the line, "Welcome home, Martha," even though she's literally confined to her home and must wear a very unstylish electronic ankle bracelet as part of her sentence. But Steve Madden Limited, a shoe company, has taken the infamy of CEO confinement to a new level of PR chutzpah. Madden himself has spent the last 2.5 years in a Florida federal prison after having been convicted in a stock fraud scheme. Rather than adopting the usual PR tactic of laying low, putting this unpleasantness behind them, and moving on, the corporation is now running ads hailing Madden's release from incarceration. "A new meaning for the word springtime," says one ad with a big wink, adding, "Steve returns spring 2005. Well, he sort of returns. Madden is no longer CEO of his namesake company, though he will stay on as the creative chief, after, of course, he gets out of the halfway house. Meanwhile, there's the little matter of the ethical message being sent by making ex-cons your corporate role model. Stephen Madden shoes, for example, are marketed mostly to teenage girls and young women. Are they being told that CEO pinstripes and jail stripes are interchangeable in the new corporate morality? Apparently so. A company spokesman says the current advertising campaign embodies and enhances the Steve Madden brand. Or, as an ad executive so happily put it, it's now in to be out. Out of prison, that is. This is Jim Hightower saying, coming soon, corporate trading cards featuring the mugshots and prison stats of CEOs. Collect the entire set.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. We've been talking about the practice of what is called extraordinary rendition, which is a really nice way to put what one CIA official said off the record. Quote, we don't kick the S, it's a four-letter word beginning with S that I will call crap. We don't kick the crap out of them. We send them to other countries so they can kick the crap out of them. Now, that's an unnamed CIA official speaking off the record. My sources tell me, in fact, that there was a secret finding by the President of the United States, actually signed into law after September 11th, saying that he could, in fact, detain anyone anywhere around the world and send them anywhere around the world for whatever purpose. There's just one problem with that, is against the law. And the president, secret or not, is not allowed to violate the Constitution of the United States, which expressly prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. Nor is he allowed to violate the several international conventions we've signed or the United States law we've signed. This law says that not even in wartime can we torture people. And the law also expressly prohibits us sending prisoners to another country to torture them. So George Bush is doing, I guess, what Clinton did when he was asked questions about Monica Lewinsky. He's being awfully cagey. He's admitting that's the law, but questioning, I guess, whether it's torture. Is rape torture? Is boiling limbs torture? Is beating someone with a cable, is that torture? Well, I'm going to get to Bush's comments in a minute, but first I want to hear from you. 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Well, Mark, it's Dave, and I did, you know, I'm convinced more and more every day that our White House has literally been stolen by psychopaths, hardcore criminals. Incidentally, today I'm not permitted to listen to you on the Internet. If I click Listen Live, it refuses to connect. If I try to call you on my own phone, I'm not permitted to do that.
Dave, we did have some problems in the first 7 minutes of the broadcast with the web stream, but it should be working now. You might want to hit reload on your computer, and I apologize for that.
Were the phones not answering?
In the first 7 minutes, our technicians were working on the broadcast, and so they weren't answering the phones. So I apologize for that. But I'm glad you're on now. And
okay, well, I am too. I had to walk a block to get on.
Sorry about that.
You do encounter more than your fair share of these glitches, you know.
Yeah, well, I won't speculate on that. Let's talk about extraordinary rendition. Were you aware this practice was going on, Dave?
Say that again, Mark.
Were you aware of this practice of sending people to other countries to be tortured?
Well, I've been hearing it, little bits and pieces of it. You and Tom Hartman and a few others have been alluding to it, but you don't hear it in any mainstream media, no.
No, in fact, I was very glad to see this in 60 Minutes. I thought it was very brave of them to put this on the air. Of course, they put it on after the election, when it could do less good, but they did at least mention it, and they have been investigating the story. What's striking to me is that even worse, I guess, than the practice, I don't know if it's worse or good, but that these people tend to be innocent. I mean, the Wall Street Journal actually wrote an editorial recently defending the practice of sending people to be tortured on the grounds that, you know, we're in a war and we got to fight any way we can. They didn't happen to talk about the fact that it was illegal to do that. But the thing is they turn out to be innocent. Whether we have Al-Masri, the guy in the 60 Minutes piece, or Maher Arar, a guy who's been living in Canada since 1991, came there as a teenager from Syria, was changing planes at JFK Airport in New York, and we shipped him to Syria, where they kept him for almost a year, beating him with large cables, keeping him in a prison cell that was 3 feet by 6 feet, and in the end, he was released and never charged with a crime. So not only are we torturing people, we are torturing innocent people.
I believe you'll find that's what Cuba is full of, our prison over there, and also our grave.
Yeah.
I think it's a It's an administration that has no regard for the rights of citizens.
The question is, for all the justification, I mean, first Bush, it was weapons of mass destruction while he went into Iraq, and that's false, and then it was connection to Al-Qaeda, and that's false. The third and last example was, you know, the torture chambers of Saddam Hussein, the rape rooms. And apparently we use the same torture chambers and the same rape rooms and do the same conduct, and then we wonder why it is that people around the world are attacking us. We wonder why it is that people around the world hate America. And what does George Bush say? Oh, well, they hate freedom and democracy. Well, maybe they hate torture. And maybe they are right to hate torture and right to be mad at us for doing it.
They hate psychopaths that are trying to dominate the world, I think.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for your call, Dave.
Thank you,
I do appreciate it. Let me go another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the Inside Scoop.
This is Ed from New York.
Hi, Ed. Good to hear from you.
Well, I've got mixed feelings about this whole thing.
Okay.
My first feeling is that when we are facing people who are willing to commit suicide, to do terrible things to us, then I think we have to take stronger measures. That's one mixed feeling. Now, on the other side is the fact that torture doesn't pay, in the sense that they consistently report that people who are tortured give up no more information than people who are not tortured.
No, they just say what the torturers want to hear. They know what the torturers want to hear, and they say it.
Right. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, let me get rid of your mixed feelings. I mean, look at the people we are torturing. We're not torturing Osama bin Laden. As far as I know, we're not even torturing Saddam Hussein, who we've captured. We're torturing people like Maher Arar and al-Masri. Now, let me ask you this. After 10 months of torture, they're released, and we don't even charge them with a crime. Doesn't that suggest to you that maybe, oops, we made a mistake?
Absolutely, I agree that we made a mistake, and I think absolutely it makes us look bad all over the world. But the problem that I have is you can't fight with boxing gloves on when the side is willing to use knives and guns and wrestling, and we have to fight a battle based on the fact that they're using suicide
bombs. But Ed, see, the problem is you're saying they, and you act like they're all one monolithic group, and they're not. There are people that are trying to attack and kill Americans, and then there are people like Maher Arar and al-Masri just trying to live their lives. And when you say, oh, well, they, and I guess you mean when you say they, al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and the real bad guys, they are really bad people, and therefore we have to use these methods, and what happens? We end up using these methods against people that aren't connected with Al-Qaeda. We make mistakes. If we're not going to have a trial, and we're not going to have evidence, and we're not going to charge people with a crime the way that the law says we should, oops, you can make mistakes. So not only are we torturing people, which, by the way, is against our Constitution, even for the real bad guys, we are actually torturing the wrong people.
I agree with you, Mark. But the problem, and I understand what you're saying. The problem that we have is, yes, we end up torturing the wrong people, and Lord knows I sure wouldn't want to be the person who is being tortured by mistake. But at the same time, how do we fight people who are using suicide bombers against us? You know, the Japanese in World War II used these kamikaze pilots.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And we fought Japan in World War II, and we should be fighting right now in Afghanistan. I know you've heard my show enough to know that I'm constantly complaining about the fact that we have 10 times the troops in Iraq as we do in Afghanistan. I have no problem being very harsh with Osama bin Laden. Frankly, I have no problem after a trial giving the guy the death penalty. I think it's, frankly, he's admitted it, so it would be a very short trial. He's admitted that he murdered 3,000 Americans. You know, no problem. You know, I'm not one of those people that I'm against the death penalty, frankly, for a lot of poorer people in the United States who don't get adequate legal counsel. But for Osama bin Laden, kill him. That's fine with me. But it seems to me that the reason we have these procedures, the reason we have arrest warrants and trials and so forth, is to make sure that we're not doing it to the wrong person. And we have a constitutional amendment that bans torture. And unless the states and the Congress overturn that constitutional amendment, I think we got to follow our Constitution. But thanks very much for your call, Ed. You got one more comment to make? You sound like
Well,
it.
As as I said, I wish you'd answer the question, how do we fight suicide bombers?
Well, the answer is, for one thing, we harden our targets, okay? We make it more difficult for them to do what they do. One of the things that I worked on when I was working on the Homeland Security Department, on the committee that oversaw the Homeland Security Department in Congress, is I worked to harden nuclear targets in the United States, to harden chemical targets, to actually act defensively. And the other thing we do, I think, is we need more spies abroad. We need more human intelligence, people watching, people finding out what they're doing, and, stopping them before they do. There's nothing unusual there. And we don't need torture as a technique. It doesn't help us. I think it just makes it, frankly, that we have more terrorists around the world. But thanks very much for your call, Ed. I do appreciate it. We're going to go to another commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to be playing from the presidential press conference to hear how George Bush justifies or can't justify the practice of extraordinary rendition. We'll be right back after this.
Disease, but did you know that it's the number one killer of women nationwide? Some of these women may have it and not even know it. Heart disease claims more lives each year than breast cancer, lung cancer, or strokes combined. But there are steps you can take to protect yourself against it. While not smoking, daily exercise, and a nutritious diet are good for your health, they're critical in the fight against heart disease. Most important, get regular checkups and ask your doctor about risk factors, especially if you're over 40, when the risk of heart disease increases dramatically. For more information on how you can prevent heart disease, contact your local American Heart Association or visit their website at www.americanheart.org. It's never too late to protect your heart health. Start now.
If you're looking for a great deal, look no further than the CX 4600 All-in-One from Epson. No one else gives you so many great features at such a brilliant price, like individual cartridges of DuraBrite ink for water, smudge, and fade-resistant photos, and built-in card slots to print directly from memory cards. You can also restore your old photos to their original beauty, all for around $99 after a $30 mail-in rebate. Buy now and also get a $20 reward card back by mail. For more brilliant deals, visit Epson.com/promotions.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the practice called extraordinary rendition by the CIA, where we pick up people we think are bad people and we ship them off to various countries that we know will torture them, countries like Syria, Morocco, Egypt, and Jordan. And we say to those countries, here are the questions we want you to ask them. We won't keep them in our prisons. We want you to take them. And, you're going to follow your laws with them, aren't you? Oh, yes, we're going to follow our laws. Terrific, because, it's against the law to torture them. And let us know the results, will you? And with a wink and a nod, off they go. And we go ahead and break our laws, break the Constitution. Toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
This is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, how are you?
Well, this is a very depressing show for me.
Yeah.
I've had some bad experiences with CIA people over the years.
In Vietnam?
Yes, I have.
What? Tell me some of your experiences.
Well, it had to do with, I had to guard some bodies, some dead KIAs from our company. They had their throats slashed.
Some Vietnamese killed in action, huh?
Right. Well, no, they were American GIs.
Oh, American GIs killed in action.
Okay. And I was on a detail with two other guys to guard these bodies on an air log pad so they get them back to Benoit, the division base camp.
Yeah.
And we were confronted by a couple men who identified themselves as CIA that they would relieve us of our duty. And I said, well, no, we're going to make sure these guys get on the plane. And it got to the point where they wanted to draw down on us, but we beat them to the draw and made sure that those bodies got on the plane.
No, wait. Are you telling me they drew weapons on you? Or they started to?
45. They tried to draw us down on a 45. We had 16s, and we were too quick for them.
And, so you had American CIA agents and American GIs almost get in a gun battle here?
Well, yeah, it's nothing. It's really wasn't that extraordinary as I think about it from my total experience. But
seems extraordinary to me.
It was a point where we had to put their faces in the dirt, and we had to have an LT come and make sure that nothing else happened. But
well, Gordon, let me ask you this, because Linda England, I know you know the case, the very young girl who was in Abu Ghraib prison, and in fact they wouldn't even let her declare guilt that she was guilty of the tortures because she didn't know that she was doing anything wrong. She was getting orders from higher ups. How do you know when you are? And I guess were you a private? Were you a sergeant?
I was a Spec 4.
A Spec 4, which is what rank? Maybe you can help me.
Corporal,
out.
Corporal, E4.
Corporal. So that's below a sergeant and above a private.
Is that right? About,
okay. So here you are, a corporal in the U.S. Army. How do you know when to obey someone who isn't your superior? I mean, if your sergeant orders you to do something, obviously you do it. But when you get a CIA guy ordering you to do something, how can you possibly know what your orders are?
We couldn't, and that was probably the thing that saved us. If it had been a commissioned officer who had given us an order and we had disobeyed, they could have probably put charges up on us. But these guys were in civvies and armed,
civilian clothes,
armed in civvies giving us orders, and that didn't wash for me. It didn't wash for the rest of us.
So these guys in civilian clothes.
Pardon me?
Why did the guys in civilian clothes were armed? Why were they telling you they wanted to take the bodies?
That's what we didn't understand. It just it just didn't make any sense.
Did they say they were CIA? I'm just curious.
They didn't have any credentials. They just said it. And so, I wasn't going to bite on that.
Yeah.
If you're going to take our guys.
Sure.
If you're going to take our guys that we saw them get killed in combat.
Yeah.
From us, and the common thing was that they were taking bodies and lacing them, putting opium in the whatnot in the chest cavities of these corpses, and bypassing Graves registration in order to get the dope out of the country. I mean, that was what I suspected.
Well, Gordon, what do you take from this awful experience in Vietnam? What do you take from that in addressing
CIA agents?
Okay.
This whole idea of what's happening now, the whole premise is when you circumvent the rule of law, how do you tell the good guys from the bad guys? And
yeah.
My opinion is you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, all the rest of my tour in Vietnam, CIA agents were bad guys to me from what that one experience.
Wow.
They weren't. Anybody tries to draw down on me, I don't care if they're a gook or whatnot. If you better get the drop on me, or I'm going to get the drop on you. That's just the way it is. And like I said, I have another experience stateside of having worked surveillance for a union, for a private investigator. We used to.
Did it involve a CIA agent, this other experience?
I worked with a CIA agent. I worked with ex-cops and CIA agents with dealing with these union strikes in Michigan, in the Detroit area, UAW stuff. And he was just slimy. It's just the impression I got. He was very well-educated, but no morals whatsoever.
Well,
and I was just a bad combination.
The only way we can ever protect ourselves as a society is through the rule of law.
I believe
that. And in fact, I'm going to take one more call, and then I'm going to play the press conference, because it's amazing to me how the president avoids that exact question.
Because
Gordon,
that protects our POWs as much as anything
else. All of us. And it's very easy for a foreign country to say, well, the United States tortures people, so we're going to torture American GIs. It's very easy for them to say that. Hey, Gordon, thanks for your call. I always appreciate when you call in. Got another caller hanging on the line. You're on the line with Mark Levine.
Yes, this is hello.
Yes, you're on the Inside Scoop.
This is Ramona from Nashville. I have a quick comment because I really know you want to get to the press conference. I would like to make a comment on something that Ed said, and I've heard Ed call in before. And normally, I agree with him, but I will say that this leads back to the fear tactics that our president and this administration has so successfully put into play, that even people who would normally, and I'm not saying that Ed was saying he was pro-torture, in fact, he made it very clear that he agreed with you, but just to even suggest for a moment that the only way to fight terror is to go against the law that you're talking about, upholding the law, it has made normal, ordinary American citizens so terrified that they will accept, and we become almost acclimated and what is the word that I'm looking for?
No, acclimated.
Null and void to any kind of thing. We'll get horrified
when
we hear about it. But fear, to me, this is what's wrong on the planet right now, is fear. Now, Mark, I know that you and I probably would disagree as far as war goes, because I have another idea about how to fight what's going on the planet. But I will say there is justified ways. And just because you do not have the answer, that does not mean let's just become the terrorists. And that's the only comment I had to make, Mark. Thanks for
Ramona,
doing a great job.
I really appreciate your comment. You know, it seems to me that at some point you've got to ask yourself, what are we fighting for? And if we're not fighting for a country that's willing to uphold these basic standards of human decency, then how is it that we are any better than the enemy?
Yes, I just want to say one thing. You know, we always put on our greeting cards, peace on earth. Now, a lot of people have said, well, that's so idealistic. But when do ideals, how long are we going to live on this planet before ideals become something that we live? And I want to know how in the hell this country thinks that we're going to attain peace on earth the way we're going about it. That's my feeling. But anyway, dear, thank you so much for
thank
the job
you.
You're doing. Keep doing it. God bless. And thanks for being on the air.
I appreciate your call.
All right, dear. Bye.
Well, Ramona, I think, put it very well. You know, what are we fighting for? What are we fighting for if we are not going to see what we're doing? Fear, she said. Fear is the thing that is getting Americans. And you know, fear is, and I'm not saying we've gone this far, but fear is what Stalin used. Fear is what Hitler used. That's what they always use. Look at George Orwell's book, 1984. That's what the dictators always use to get the Americans in line, to get the people in line, I should say, of whatever people, but certainly right now, Americans. I do want to play for you, though, part of the Bush press conference, because it's amazing to me how George Bush failed to answer a very direct question precisely on this issue. Listen to the press conference.
Mark. Mr. President, under the law, how would you justify the practice of renditioning, where U.S. agents scoop up terror suspects abroad, taking them to a third country for interrogation? And would you stand for it if foreign agents did that to an American here?
That's a hypothetical, Mark.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that little grin? That's a hypothetical, Mark. And then he gives a little laugh. He doesn't say it's not true. He doesn't say it is true. He says that's a hypothetical. In other words, he's suggesting that it's not true, but he's not saying it's not true. He's not saying we don't do that. No, he's very cagey. What he says is this.
We operate within the law, and we send people to countries where they say they're not going to torture the people. But
No. We operate within the law. We operate within the law. Now, who is the law for this president? Is it the Constitution of the United States, which he has sworn to uphold, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment? Or is it the way that his legal advisors, the way his legal advisors interpret that law? We know, for example, that that Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, back when he was the president's lawyer, that he interpreted torture to not include the things prohibited under the Geneva Convention. You could, for example, hold somebody underwater until they almost drowned, until they thought they were drowning, and then lift them up. And if they don't die, it's not torture. In fact, it was Alberto Gonzalez that said that the Geneva Conventions are quaint. So when the president has his own legal advisors telling him, no, it's not torture. Don't worry, Mr. President. Then he can say, well, according to what I'm told, we're following the law. And if he had a legal advisor that didn't tell him it was legal, you know that that legal advisor would be out on his ear. Note how the president never answers the question. The question was, and I'll go back, I'll play it again. We're going to play it from the beginning. Listen to the question, and I'm going to play the president's entire response, and I want you to hear how the president never answers the basic question of how it would be justified under the law to do what we do.
Mark. Mr. President, under the law, how would you justify the practice of renditioning where U.S. agents scoop up terror suspects abroad, taking them to a third country for interrogation? And would you stand for it if foreign agents did that to an American here?
That's a hypothetical, Mark. We operate within the law, and we send people to countries where they say they're not going to torture the people. But let me say something. The United States government has an obligation to protect the American people. It's in our country's interest to find those who would do harm to us and get them out of harm's way. And we will do so within the law, and we'll do so in honoring our commitment not to torture people. And we expect the countries where we send somebody to not to torture as well. But you bet, when we find somebody who may do harm to the American people, we will detain them and ask others from their country of origin to detain them. It makes sense. The American people expect us to do that. We're still at war. You know, I've said this before to you, I'm going to say it again. One of my concerns after September the 11th is the farther away we got from September the 11th, the more relaxed we would all become and assume that there wasn't an enemy out there ready to hit us. And I just can't let the American people, I'm not going to let them down by assuming that the enemy's not going to hit us again. We're going to do everything we can to protect us. And we got guidelines, we've got law. But you bet, Mark, we're going to find people before they harm us.
Now, this is wrong on so many levels. Let's go through and hear exactly what the president said. Okay, first of all, he would answer the question of whether we are sending people abroad to be tortured. Everyone knows we are. Everyone knows we are. It's not just 60 Minutes. The CIA knows it. We have prisoners who have been tortured, and the CIA won't comment on it. Okay, so it's not hypothetical. We're doing it. And the question the president was asked is, under the law, how do you justify taking people from our country and rendering them to another country to be tortured? And what does the president say? First of all, he says, well, the countries say they're not going to torture these people. We're sending people to Syria, Mr. President, a country that on other occasions you're not too fond of. In fact, it's a country that I don't want to be owed favors to. I don't want that our government says, well, Syria torture people for us. We owe them some favors. I don't want to owe any favors to the government of Syria. And they say they're not going to torture people. That's enough for you? But then the president goes on. He says, well, we have an obligation to protect the American people. It's in our country's us to find those that do harm. Does anyone dispute that, Mr. President? What does it have to do with sending people abroad to be tortured? Well, what does the president say? Well, he says, if we find people who are going to do harm to Americans, we detain them, and we ask other countries to detain them. But that wasn't the question now, was it, Mr. Bush? The question was, why do we take people in America and send them to other countries? Not whether we detained them here or whether they detained them there. And then he goes on and says, well, we got guidelines. We've got law. What is the law? The question that was asked, Mr. President, is what is the law that justifies rendition? It's a very clear question. I'm going to play it for you one last time. Just listen to the question that the president refused to answer.
Thanks as well. Mark.
Mr. President, under the law, how would you justify the practice of renditioning where U.S. agents scoop up terror suspects abroad, taking them to a third country for interrogation? And would you stand for it if foreign agents did that to an American here?
He never answered those questions. One, is it justified under the law? He knows it's not. But he didn't answer the question. And number two, would he stand for it if foreign agents did it to Americans? Now, my sources tell me that the president has signed a secret finding. In other words, this president, in his mind, it is legal under the law. The problem is that the president has zero power under our Constitution to make law where Congress hasn't authorized him to do so. That secret finding, if it exists, and I suspect it does based on my sources, it is unconstitutional. So you have the Republicans in Congress, and we're going to go over a little bit since the stream didn't work earlier. We have Republicans in Congress, the Speaker of the House, Denny Hastert, who is saying that he has a law. He wants to pass a law to make this torture legal, to make this practice of renditioning legal. The problem is that it's against the Constitution. That's it for the radio audience. For the internet audience, I'm going to go over a little bit. Let me just say goodbye to the radio audience and say see you tomorrow here on The Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. Since we had some problems with the internet, I feel like I owe you a full 8 minutes, those of you on the internet. So let me just talk a little bit more about the people that have been sent to other countries. Well, the most famous is Maher Arar, this Canadian born in Syria, who was changing planes in JFK Airport. We shipped into Syria where he was beaten, never charged with a crime. There's Al-Masri, right? The guy on 60 Minutes. And the amazing thing is that this whole thing is useless. These guys are turning out to be innocent. And I just want to close by reading a couple blog comments I thought were very, very wise comments. The first is from Dr. Ed from Kansas, and he writes, "Perhaps when you're trying to fix the intelligence to a policy, torture actually does pay off." Well, Dr. Ed, we've talked about how the president makes a decision and then tries to fix the intelligence to back it up. Instead of looking at the intelligence and deciding what to do, he and Tony Blair as well decided to invade Iraq and then looked to fix the intelligence to figure out how to justify it. Frankly, Ronald Reagan did the same thing. He invaded Grenada first, and then he looked for the justification to do what he did. So unfortunately, it's very common. I know, Dr. Ed, you posted on my website a memo that describes exactly what happened there, where the secret memo, and that's all the stir in Great Britain about how they planned to invade Iraq first. I have to tell you, I did report on that. I reported on it on Monday, and I will continue to mention that memo. And lastly, I want to read a comment by Rod. Rod writes, "This is wrong." Excuse me, this is Rick. Rick from Minnesota. Rick writes, "This is wrong on so many levels. First, we are sending out prisoners to countries that we already classify as supporting terrorists." That's absolutely right, Rick. "Then these countries also have governments that are dictatorships." Exactly right, Rick. "Then we accuse these evil governments. The things that we accuse these evil governments of doing, we turn around and do ourselves. Our government has moved even closer to becoming like the people we call the enemy. Human life has lost all value, and the conservatives have led the charge." I do have one more call, and I think I'll take it since this is an extended internet session. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hi, Mark. It's Michael from Alabama.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
What can we do? I mean, I live in Alabama. My senators don't do anything for me.
Here's what I would do, and I don't know that you personally can do it, but one thing that can be done and I think should be done is I hope these prisoners get some good lawyers. I would think – here's what you can do, Michael. Call the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and